Welcome to Bruderhof Radio, a bi-monthly program broadening the bounds of discourse on progressive thought and action. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman. Today on Bruderhof Radio...
If you had a hospital in your neighborhood that was turning out crippled people more crippled than they went in originally, you would get rid of that hospital. So you have to think that way in terms of prison. How are you going to protect the public if you're turning out a guy who is much worse when he comes out?
On a rainy day early this June, Bruderhof Radio paid a visit to one of America's most written about houses of death, the infamous Sing Sing prison in New York. Set high on the banks of the Hudson River, it has stood for decades as a symbol of American justice and injustice, inspiring fear in the hearts of many who pass below its fortress walls. Still, for all the jumble of concrete and steel, the prison is now no different from any other correctional facility in New York State, except perhaps for one thing. Sing Sing is host to the first ever master's degree program to operate within the walls of a modern-day prison. Today, in the second half of our program, From the Belly of the Beast, Bruderhof Radio continues its coverage of the prison industrial complex through the eyes of participants in this unique educational program. Seated around tables in a nondescript classroom somewhere in the heart of the prison, the 17 men in this year's Masters of Professional Studies program spoke at length regarding society's attitudes to incarceration and rehabilitation. In any other situation, the arguments with which they dissected the politics of our current judicial system may have seemed like so much academic leftist ranting. But this time, however, they are being spoken by the very individuals who pay the price, and that in itself compels us to lend an ear.
Well, two things come into play. One is job security and one is politics. People vote for people who are going to give them jobs. And once they have the jobs, they need to make sure those jobs are secured and all the benefits that go with it. And most people, unfortunately, are willing to look the other way. You know, if they see something unjust taking place over here, they're willing to look the other way. It's been the same thing throughout history. As long as they are getting the food, the clothes, and the shelter, and they're secure, you know, their bills are paid and so on and so forth, most of them are willing to look the other way because the benefits that they get from these jobs are great. The job security is more than most jobs that they'll ever get, because the qualifications for getting the jobs in the first place are not that high. You know, most of them barely squeezed through high school and got a high school diploma. And to jump right into a job like this, like that, with all the benefits that goes with it, and be able to pay the bills, buy the house, the car, and so forth. And if they get married, the benefits increase and so forth. So there's a lot of things to fight to hold on to from their views, especially when you look at the rural community upstate New York, where those areas were depleted of factories over the years, or depleted of any kind of industry over the years, where they literally are begging to have a prison built in their respective area. They will do anything to keep those jobs. And so, you know, my little situation, or another inmate's little situation, where he may have fallen victim to a crime-generative atmosphere, he's just providing the means by which they could secure that job. And that's the essence of the antagonism that happens between those who have the jobs and those who are the victims of the system. Because all you have to do is look around you and see who are the majority of the people in prison. There are several things that most prisoners have in common. One of them is the fact that 99.9% of them are poor. And I'd say about 45 to 50% of them are black. Not to mention the Hispanic aspect, which is about 20 or 25 or 30%. Mm-hmm. Okay, now you have a few sprinkling of Asians and stuff. And then you have some whites. But the vast majority of the people are black and poor. Black meaning that they are subjected to racism. Poor meaning that they're subjected to economic disenfranchisement. They can't afford lawyers. They're not going to get any justice in the judicial system. And so what you have, what you're going to end up inevitably with is a prison population that is black and poor. And all you have to do is go in the mess hall and look at the faces of the guys sitting there eating, black and poor. So inevitably, the system is racist. But the people out there that has these jobs, they are not looking at it like that. They're looking at it based on the fact that they have a house, they have cars, they could send their kids to school, and they're happy. And the guy who was able to get them those jobs are the guy that they voted for. In fact, we recently discovered that a lot of the prisons that are built over the last 10 or so years are built in Republican districts. And the numbers of the guys in those prisons actually are added to the number of that district. So whatever benefits that the district asks for from their politicians, they use the number of prisoners in their prisons to justify getting more benefits. So you see the dichotomy that comes as a result of that. You find that we can't vote, we don't have a voice, but our numbers are counted. And they're receiving benefits using our numbers, none of which we receive.
It is clear that these men face significant obstacles in their quest for higher education, presented by other inmates, prison administrators, and politicians. But at the same time, they seem to understand the delicate balance between their guilt and the guilt of the current social and economic system.
I don't want you, any of you, to leave here with the impression that I or any of my classmates are preaching that everybody that gets convicted of a felony was innocent, or everybody who went through the judicial system was treated totally unfairly, because everybody is not, especially if you had the money to get the kind of legal assistance that you could. Usually when you do have the money, you get the kind of attention that you get, but that's one of the problems with the system, is that it's unfair in that if you don't have the money, you don't get the service, okay? And because you don't have the money, you're going to get the smelly end of the stick, all right? Now, in here, we have 17 guys. You see 17 guys who struggled. When I say struggled, I mean struggled hard to come to this point. We are not, by any means, having an easy go at it or an easy time of it. It's not easy, especially for guys that live in Taipan. That's the medium section of the facility, where it's an open dorm and absolutely no privacy, no quiet time. In order for us to study, Bill Webber had to bring us earplugs so we could put them in and so we could block the noise out and be able to read and write what we need to read and write and turn in our work assignment. So what I'm saying is that it is not easy.
One of the things that Ashawn spoke about that I think needs to be emphasized a little bit more is that when you consider, here's a guy who does 8 to 10, 15 to 20 years incarcerated, and he has been paid $7 every 2 weeks for his labor. He comes out of the inner cities, and he has been sent to Clinton, Dannemora. And because he's been shuffled all over the state for a number of years, much of his family has lost contact. So that connectedness to his family is gone. And he hasn't been able to save very much money, if any, from that $7 that he makes every 2 weeks. Now, after 10 years or 15 years of being told that he isn't anything, that he's not worthless and he deserves whatever treatment that he receives at the hands of prison officials, He is released back into society. They tell him, go to a shelter, find a place, do whatever you have to do, and they give him $40. Now, if I was a citizen and I knew that this was getting ready to happen, I would be a little upset. But I would be even more upset if I found out that each year 20,000 men and women throughout the state are released back into society with those same type of circumstances. So here you have 20,000 dispossessed and marginalized, angry, bitter, poor people that are thrust back into society after having been incarcerated for a number of years. And then you mentioned the mainstream media. The mainstream media doesn't say anything about this, so most people don't know anything. They don't even know what's coming at them. But when that individual commits another crime, okay, because the $40 don't last very long, particularly doesn't go anywhere when you talk about trying to find some place to live and then some clothes and then something to eat, doesn't last very long. So when that person commits another crime, in comes the Fourth Estate, okay? Parolee commits another crime, and it's splashed, and we see it. The world's greatest convict. We need to do away with parole. But none of the issues are addressed. But also, here's one other thing, and then I'll quit. There's no preparation for job readiness for guys inside of prisons. If a guy gets a job where he's working in the automotive repairs, he's working on maybe a 78 Chevy or whatever, and he is not prepared for the North Star system or any of these recent innovations. He's not prepared for that. So when he goes out and tries to get a job at General Motors or wherever, they say, no can do. Your skills are archaic. They're outdated. We can't use you. And that's the problem that you have with most people who are released from prison. They don't have any skills. I could probably get a job as a preacher because I could run my mouth. But some people would have a problem trying to find a job. And then certainly NYTS assists us when they come in and they offer us an opportunity, those of us who have undergraduate degrees, a chance to earn a graduate level degree. That certainly ups the ante a little bit and gives us another step up the rung in terms of marketability and employability. But most guys are not in that situation. Now, it took me 6 years to get here, just in waiting and because the competition is fierce. So it took me 6 years. And when you go around the room, most of my colleagues, it took a number of years to get into this program. And then because as a result of being in the program, we access some resources as a result of the people who are involved, the professors and other contacts, and we have a chance to get some resources. And then certainly there are guys like Eddie Ellis and Lonnie McLeod and T. Haywood, who are graduates of the program, guys who have done a lot of time in prison, but are also outside in society, making positive strides to becoming productive citizens. You never hear about that. Those names I just mentioned, you probably don't even know those guys. And yet, those guys are running organizations, they're pastors of churches, Darren Fergusons, who we affectionately call Tank, the Julio Mendinas. These guys are running organizations and creating jobs and helping youth. Reverend Lonnie McLeod, who just received his doctorate's degree, okay, is a pastor of a church, and he also started a youth program called U-Turn. You didn't hear anything about that in mainstream media. But these are guys who have gotten out of prison, and they are doing productive things. They are not committing crimes, and we never hear about this. And that's why I want that to be said over the air, so there's another side that you could hear. Guys don't just get out of prison and continue to commit crimes. If the resources are there, if the right people are exposed to them while they're incarcerated, then what happens is these guys have options, viable options that are presented to them. And many men choose a life of productivity and law abiding as opposed to criminality. Because most of us, particularly in my class, are 40 and 50 years old. We don't want to come to prison anymore. We're through with this type of lifestyle. So we need the help that genuinely caring and loving people on the outside could offer.
You're listening to Bruderhof Radio. We're speaking with participants in the Masters of Professional Studies program at Sing Sing Correctional Facility in Ossining, New York. While some of the men in Sing Sing discussed readily apparent problems like biased media coverage of parolees and outdated vocational training in prisons, Others delved further into the system they call the prison industrial complex. The root of many prison-related problems, says Herb, a program participant, is that politicians now use prisons to warehouse society's undesirables.
The Department of Correction has become a part of the prison industrial complex of America, and it should be named to me the Department of Genocide. All right? What they're doing is they're warehousing people, and they're turning people into merchandise. They're turning us into units. I call us units because we're being used to promote the interests of others. And our pain, our suffering, our misery is being used to keep people with jobs, where industry has left, and the prisons. And there was a time when they were, where they would protest and strike to keep prisons out of the community. Now they're begging for prisons to come into the communities because they see that the prisons are replacing the industries that were in the community. They represent jobs. They represent the well-being of the community. There's communities where there was one stop sign or one traffic light. They put a prison there. They become a booming industry. And when you mentioned something about the resources, we represent the resources from our communities. So what's happening is they're not only taking us out of our communities, the resources away from our communities, they're bringing us here, and guys are changing their lives. We represent a special segment that have done things to change our lives, that have learned things to go out and try to redeem ourselves for the things that we've done wrong in the community, to try to build ourselves up so that we can help build others up. Earlier you had asked a question about guys coming into the program to get information and to better themselves. But after coming through this program, we can never, I don't think, ever think about just ourselves without thinking about trying to reach out and help and to empower other people and to help other people. Because we've learned that, you know, for me, that this is what it's really about. What's happening is guys are changing their lives, and because the prison system is not about corrections anymore, it's about keeping people and making money off of them, then the people that are ready to go back into the communities, that have changed their lives and would represent the best resources for building up the communities and revitalizing the communities and bringing them back to life, are not being released from these prisons. The political atmosphere is one that says hold to keep guys in prison whether they're worthy of going out or not. They set up certain criteria. We're sentenced in the court, number one. They set up criteria for us to things to do in the prison system, which would seem to allow that once a person has completed all of these things and done at least a minimum amount of time, and they've changed their lives, and you can see when somebody's basically someone, there's a different awe about them, there's a different atmosphere about them, especially if their spirituality has changed and they've enhanced their life. And they're going to the parole boards, and people are not being released. You have guys that have come out of this program, have contributed in every way they can to people around them inside the prison, and have made differences in people's lives outside the prison, and they're not being returned to the community. There's the brother brought up the point about just simply the fact that we are on the census. We count on the census of the communities that we are in. In other words, 97% of the new prisons that are being built in New York State prison system are being built in Republican districts, and the governor is a Republican. And this has happened basically since he's been in office. So what's going on is that we're being used to pay back promises. We were used to get elected.
Bill Weber, the director of the master's degree program at Sing Sing since it began 18 years ago, has tried to remain upbeat about his work. There is no doubt that he appreciates the cooperation of the New York Department of Corrections. Without their consent, his program could not exist. But the longer we talked, the more apparent were his frustrations with society's failed approach to rehabilitation.
I think you could say the whole history of prison in the United States has been an effort to be corrections, but then there's violence in the prison and they don't know how to make it work, and they give up and say, all we got is for punishment. And that pendulum goes back and forth. And after Attica, there was a serious effort, clearly, to make it a correction system. But they never knew how to sort of put together in one or two prisons the people that really were committed to trying to turn their lives around, and those that were so messed up that they were just going to be, that they couldn't respond and were just going to be troublemakers. And the troublemakers always mess up any program that you try and have. So then you give up and say, oh, it's hopeless, and go back to punishment. Also, when you put in some, when you enlarge the prison population so much, it's much more difficult to deal on, to take seriously the individual needs of people. But there was, even as recently as 6 years ago, there was a major effort in the Department of Correction to try and challenge every person that came into this prison, to give them a pattern by which they could make good and effective use of the prison time. That just disappeared. It's been said by other persons that you want to look at the health, the overall health of a society, look at how it deals with its people in prisons. And I think that you have to really do say that what's going on in the prisons of this country, and New York State is one of the better ones, in terms of the way by which who was arrested, what kind of help you get in terms of your court cases, who gets sent to prison, the whole drug base. You've got to say that this is a symbol of racism in a new definition that is staggering to think, when we think that the civil rights movement made some significant change. You can make a very good case that we've reestablished, we've restored the plantation without anybody being aware of it. The economic dependence of small towns and cities on the slavery, the breaking up of families by shipping the inmates far away from one state to another, and so on. The whole business of saying that education can be very subversive. We didn't let the men on plantation learn how to read. I mean, it's a very serious reality that this is a symbol of a very sick society, because we have. It is the ultimate expression of a society that is still committed to racism.
The most poignant moment of our visit to Sing Sing came when one of the group, Aishan, reminded us of society's original intent in creating a system of incarceration, namely, that inmates be turned back into productive citizens. Taxpayers, he says, must realize now that they are being cheated out of a valuable service.
When we leave, when a person leaves prison, okay, and go back to his community, he's supposed to be going back to a community that approves of him being taken away from that community in the first place, and now that he has supposedly served his time, to come back to the community a better person. But guess what? That's not the case. Because traditionally, we've been taught indirectly that prison is a terrible place. Prison was never meant to be a place where you get rehabilitated. Prison was never meant to be a place where you become a better person. So when you see a guy come from prison, the first thing that comes to your mind is, man, this must be a mean dude. But guess what? The prison is a public service. So who is it supposed to serve? It's supposed to serve you, the taxpayers. Okay? Now, if it's serving you, the taxpayers, don't you deserve a product coming out of that prison that is better than the product that went in there? You, as a taxpayer, have a right to demand that. Hold up. If you put a car in a car shop that's broken, you expect to get a car out of that car shop that's better than the one you put in. And that's what you're paying for. So as a taxpayer, if you say, hold up, I want prisons for the bad guys. You put a bad guy in a prison, you want a good guy coming out of there, right or wrong. It's logic. But we've been duped. We've been tricked into thinking that this particular car shop don't have any obligation to produce a better product. You see the psychology? So with the taxpayers, because we're no longer taxpayers, but the taxpayers must begin to demand of the system a better inmate, a better product coming out of those prisons. The situation right now is that the parole board is releasing guys who they know for a fact are coming back to prison. guys like us, they don't want to let out because they know that the recidivism rate for us is less. So guys that are that hardly have any GEDs, guys that hardly know how to read and write, no skills, no nothing, they let them go. They letting them go. And guess who's coming back? The same guys that they let them go. So the system perpetuates itself. So we want the taxpaying public to understand that they have a right to demand better of that system. If you had a hospital in your neighborhood that was turning out people more crippled than they went in originally, you would get rid of that hospital. So you have to think that way in terms of prison. This is a public institution designed and created and set up initially to serve the public and to protect the public. How are you going to protect the public if you're turning out a guy who is much worse when he comes out, who is much meaner when he comes out, much more vindictive, much more hate in his heart against a system that stomped him out psychologically, spiritually, mentally, and everything, and then let him out in the street? They're doing a disservice to you as a taxpayer. So now you have to walk around in fear saying, oh, this guy got bitterness in his heart. You know, they treated him real bad when he was in there. They're going to, you know, the first thing he's going to want to do is get revenge. You, as a taxpayer, do not deserve to live in that kind of fear. You, as a taxpayer, have the right to demand much more.
You've been listening to Bruderhof Radio, a special report on the prison industrial complex. In this program, we spoke with participants in the Masters of Professional Studies program at Sing Sing Correctional Facility in New York. For tapes and transcripts of this program, call us toll-free at 1-800-778-8461. This program was produced by Andrew Zimmerman and Ben Wright. Special thanks to Fred Mao for additional reporting. Bruderhof Radio is a production of the Bruderhof Communities, a communal movement based on Christ's Sermon on the Mount, in particular the teachings concerning brotherly love and love of enemies, mutual service, nonviolence, and the refusal to bear arms. Money and possessions are pooled voluntarily, and in turn each member is provided for and cared for. For more information about the Bruderhof Communities and Bruderhof Radio, call 1-800-778-8461. Again, that's 1-800-778-8461.